Thank you, Robert. I'm so impressed at the way you got everybody quiet by holding your iPad. I'm going to do the same. I'm told we're streaming live tonight, so no pressure. Just make sure you behave yourself because it's going out live. Also, it does mean that if you can't hear me at the back, please raise a hand. I don't mind if those people who are listening elsewhere get jolted out of their seats because my volume goes up. They can adjust it. Why do I do this? No, seriously, why do I do this? I was asking myself that question while Robert was doing the introduction. And it's a real question. I actually want you to ask your neighbour now. Why do you do this? Okay, that's it. Why do I do this? It's my first time. It takes me a while to learn the rules. Okay, so what came out? Just shout out some things that struck you. Why do I do this? Good question. What is it? What came out? Why are we coaches? Why do we do it? Impact? Yep. Just any conversation? Unpack a little bit more. So a focused conversation, brilliant. Yep. Empathy. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Empathy.
Great. Yes, absolutely.
Facilitating change.
Facilitating change. I missed the one from further back.
Fulfillment.
Yep.
Self awareness.
Life purpose.
Okay, great. Yes. Never forget fun. It may not appear on any of the slides tonight, but it absolutely needs to be there. Okay, so there are a lot of reasons why we do it, but a lot of them are around the same sort of terms. I want you to try and spot various terms that come up tonight to do with our theme. The theme is from great to greatness. And the key to that movement, I'm going to argue, is about purpose. It's about discovering our purpose, our particular, unique, special purpose, a transformation purpose. This is what I was born for. That's the moment we're talking about. If you're coaching someone, if they're moving into something and you hear them say, or if you said it when you started coaching, wow, this is what I was born for. That's where we're going tonight. I've got a quote for you. See if you can work out who said it. This is the true joy in life. The being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community. And as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. We could spend hours trying to work out who it is, I'll tell you. George Bernard Shaw. Not the most obvious person talking about true joy in life, being used for a purpose. My life belongs to the whole community. That's the sort of area we are going to unpack tonight. We're part of a privileged profession. I do believe that genuinely. We're invited into the business life and the personal life of people who choose to be vulnerable in front of us. They share things with us that quite often they will say, I have shared this with no one else. We truly do go where no one else has ever been. And it can be a scary place at times because we're called to hold that. We're called to be a mirror, a sounding board, a basin, use whatever metaphor you like for that. Can be scary for us, it's scary for the person who's doing it. We are invited to share their successes and their not quite successes. We're invited to celebrate with them. We're invited sometimes, yes, to cry with them. I will readily confess, I have sat with people in a coaching conversation and I've been in tears. Sometimes of joy, usually. Sadness. with what we're going through. That is an immense privilege. We get to share their joys and their sorrows, their struggles and their triumphs. So it seems to me what's going on is why we owe it to be the very best that we can be as coaches, to look at our own development and sometimes go into scary areas or areas that wind us up as part of our training and our building of experience. So part of the invitation tonight might be to invite you to go into areas you never thought you'd go into. Areas that might wind you up. Areas that might annoy you. Don't worry, we're not going to do it in public. It's only going to be in the things we talk about. So over the course of the next 50 minutes, I'm going to talk about what Bernard Shaw talked about as being the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose, the things that we were talking about when you shared, why do I do this? Fulfillment, empathy, standing alongside, challenging the people that we coach, and sometimes soothing with them. I'm going to do that in an emerging area called spiritual intelligence. So can I do a quick straw poll? How many of you have come across the term spiritual intelligence or SQ? Okay, thank you. A handful. Bear with me if some of the things I say then at this stage you've already come across. It's for the benefit of the majority of whom this is a new area. I'm going to do that with the help of somebody called Nick, who is a case study but based on a very real person that I coached. And I'm going to do it with Nick as CEO of the Omega Marketing Group, shortened to OMG. Names have been changed to protect the innocent and the guilty. And by the way, I've deliberately made Nick male because we sometimes feel, and it's probably true, that people with a male typography are less likely to use some of the terminology I'm going to look at tonight. I'm not being any more gender specific than that, a male typology. Okay, let's move in a little bit. That, by the way, is me. More hair. More hair? Wearing a tie. Come back to that in a moment. I discovered recently, because we're in the process of moving house, and you know, you throw out all sorts of stuff and go through the photos again, discovered that there are only three photos of me up to the age of 14 where I am not wearing a tie. And that includes on the beach. That tells you a lot about my upbringing and why I'm as uptight as I am. How did I get involved in this? We're going to look at this stage at some context for spiritual intelligence. And I'm going to take you to three snapshots in my life. The first one is Brighton, a secondary school, and an English lesson. I'm a very new Ofsted inspector, sitting in inspecting the English teacher's lesson. And I've got to tell you, it's good. It's jaw-droppingly good. I'm sitting there after, I suppose I taught in secondary school probably for 12 years, a long time ago, and thinking, wow, how can she do that 3 years in teaching? And I got nowhere near that after 10 or 15 or whatever. It's a wow lesson. By the way, you know Ofsted, everything is regulated. I'm sitting there with a massive, great handbook and 25 forms to fill out in the first 5 minutes. You know the Ofsted definition of an outstanding lesson? Clearly no Ofsted inspectors here, thank goodness. The Ofsted, I can quote it off by heart, all the detail. The Ofsted definition of an outstanding lesson is, wow. Brilliant, because you sit there and if the teacher does that lesson, you're sitting there going, wow, okay. It's absolutely brilliant. I love that definition. We're going to come back to wow quite a lot this evening, because it's one of those key words, one of those feature words that are really important. Okay, second one, Bradford. Bradford, shortly after the Bob race riots, if you remember those, 10, 15 years ago now, Bradford, Bolton and Oldham. I think that's right. Burnley, Bradford, Burnley and Oldham. And somebody has seen community cohesion on my CV, so I'm sent up to Bradford to look after community cohesion. As you can see, I am supremely qualified to be doing that in Bradford. But hey, the only way you can do it is walk into a room full of other people and say, this is who I am. And to try to get communities listening to each other, really, really listening, and recognising that the old way of reacting, well, if they propose something, I'm against it, don't care what it is, but I am, is actually a real challenge and a real privilege. Bradford was a failing local authority, and Serco were invited by the Department for Education to take over the running of the schools and to break the mould. Wow. Can you imagine going into a local authority in a city with the remit of breaking the mould in order to put kids back at the centre of education and make a difference? What a privilege. We actually had some cut-out figures of children in the office because, I don't know about you, but when you get involved in some of the infighting, it's very easy to forget why you're there. That was a wow moment. The next one, 9th of the 9th, 2012. Anybody recognise it? Sorry, I'm standing in front of the... It's the closing ceremony of the Paralympic Games. Yeah. And I am down there somewhere on the front right. You won't spot me, not least because I had hair then, before I shaved it all off. Talking to those competitors, particularly the Paralympians, what blew them away more than anything else, the non-Brits, was why are people cheering us when we finish? We're not Brits. Why are the stadium full when there are no Brits taking part? Well, the answer is because we care about sport, we recognise and we salute achievement whoever does it, but they were just blown away. And that same word came back. Wow! That is absolutely amazing. And it sounds trite, but in the context of the Paralympics, they were saying it'll never be the same competing again. We will never be the same. The German Paralympian coach said to us, I will not try and do the German accent, said to me, there is a part of me that forever now will be British. Wow. We did a good job. We did it on time. We did it on budget by moving the budget a little bit. And not only that, the business generation that we planned to do in 3 years post-Olympics, we achieved in one. Proud to be part of that. The country should be proud of what we did on that. It was a wow moment. Okay, three wow moments that got me thinking, I must be missing something here because a lot of what I'm doing doesn't feel like that. Now, I know you can't have the Olympics, Paralympics, every year. You can't do that day in, day out. But what was going on? What was it that got us so excited? What was it that got other people so excited? What is it that when you hear people, when we're coaching them, getting excited, what was going on? Well, it is a sense of being part of something bigger. It is a part of a wow moment. It's a point of amazement. And that fascinated me. So I did a lot of thinking, a lot of research, a lot of studying, which I don't particularly like, if I can say that in a coaching circle here. I do it because I need to. I was invited to write a book. The book came out. Suddenly found myself a published author. And I realised that when I delved into the people that I was coaching, quite a lot of them were asking some questions about that motivation and purpose and making a difference and what's going on and being drawn to something, something that was greater than themselves. It's quite something, isn't it? I keep that photo, that first photo of me on Skeggy Beach, because I was brought up in Nottingham, in the area of Nottingham that not only takes my surname, those of you who know it, Hyson Green, but also at the time had the highest crime rate in the UK. And there I was, holding a copy of a book with my name on it. My parents would never have believed it. I would never have believed it. But isn't that what coaching is about? Isn't that at heart why we do it? Because we want to help people be the best people that they can and exceed their own expectations and actually make a difference. Disagree with me if you like, but that seems to me that's what coaching is about, and that's why it's such a privilege. Making a difference, taking people beyond their own expectations, building that sense of, wow, I get it. Yes, I can do that. And seeing them do it. Welcome to the realm of spiritual intelligence. So let's go. There's a long definition, which is not in the slides, but don't try and take it down. There's a short one that is. The long definition. Our innate need to connect the activities of our daily life, our wellsprings of deepest meaning, that compels us beyond ourselves and our narrow self-interest to the greater good and to make a difference. But actually, that's a better one. Our innate desire to connect to something greater than ourselves. Okay with that as a starting point? It's not the sum total by any means, but it's the starting point for the definition. So we're going to begin to pick up. All right, that's the context. So why is it so important? Why is it I'm banging on about it wherever I can, on every opportunity I can? Why is it at the heart of a coaching book? Well, let me ask you another question first. This is one just to think about for a moment yourselves rather than share with neighbours. Who are the leaders that you most admire? They can be living, they can be dead. They can be real, they can be imaginary, they can be famous, they can be the person next door, they can be the person, somebody in your family somewhere. Who are the people that you really, really admire? And a few seconds just to think about that. Keep that person in mind, or those people in mind. We're going to come back to them later on. Why do we do it? Why is it significant? That's part of the reason. We're going to unpack what those people bring shortly. Is there an interest in the area that I'm talking about? Well, there's a lot of research that suggests there absolutely is. Not only that most people are seeking meaning in their life and work, and I think, in fact, you've already had at least one previous lecture around that theme, the theme of meaning in life. There are a whole lot of books about finding meaning in life. Most of us struggle if we feel that what we're doing has no sense of meaning. Is that a fair point? Most of our people we coach struggle if they have no sense of meaning, and actually it's quite often the reason that we're there coaching them in the first place, whether that's in business, life coaching. Interestingly enough, sometimes even in sport. I used to be a professional swimming coach. One of the questions I used to ask my competitors, in those days were mostly under 20, because by the time you were 20, you were past it as a swimmer. How life changes. Why are you doing this? What's the meaning? What's the purpose of it? It's even more interesting if you ask their parents. Let's not go into that one. The research also suggests that most people are innately spiritual, not religious. I cannot emphasize, underline, capitalize, emphasize, repeat enough. For this purpose, that is not the same as religious. Okay? Religion is what some people do with that sense of the spiritual. They put a liturgy around it. They put beliefs and codes around it. They put practices around it. They put rituals around it. It's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that sense of when you see something incredibly beautiful, perhaps in the countryside, and you think, oh, wow, that view. How on earth? It's been a great 2 or 3 weeks, if you happen to be anywhere facing west at sunset, the most spectacular sets of sunsets over the last few weeks. Absolute wow factor bits. We saw some sense that we are not tiny ants living in isolation. There is something else to this life. We may not know what it is, may not even have really thought much beyond that about what it is, but there's something, we reckon. Now let's get hard-nosed for a bit. Most of my coaching is with business people. So they are hard-nosed a lot of the time, particularly if I'm being called in by a head of HR to coach somebody. And usually their first question is, in some form or other, is this a waste of money, Peter? Now, clearly they're not expecting me to say no. Not expecting me to say yes. I was going to phrase that the other way around initially. They're not expecting me to say yes, it's a waste of money. However, we can now draw on quite a lot of research, including from the venerable CIPD and some people whose name will appear in the bibliography at the end, but just to source it, a couple called Neck and Milliman, who've written various books on this theme. And they claim their research shows that people who are recognised as having a high spiritual intelligence, high SQ, if you like, are more productive, more committed to their employer, less likely to leave, take fewer days off ill, and perhaps most surprising of all, are better at innovation and creative thinking. Who knew? In which case, why would you ever, as a business, not start looking at this area? That's research based on literally thousands of individuals and thousands of businesses and thousands of stats across the world, and probably, certainly in excess of a dozen sources. We can't go into those now, but that's where that's going. So for those who want to know, is there a business imperative for doing it? That's the data. Some expect it to have academic credibility. Now, personally, I'm an activist. I can never understand why somebody needs an academic verification. I had enormous problems with Routledge when they were editing that book because they wanted sources for quotes. I can throw quotes out because I can remember the quotes. I can't always remember who said them. I certainly can't remember what book it came from. I certainly cannot remember what edition. And it's hopeless asking me what page it came from. That's what they insisted on. So a fair number of quotes never made it into the book. I thought they were brilliant. And Routledge said, well, if you don't have the verification for it, you can't put it in. So here's the academic credibility. It comes via three names and a quote. Sounds like a film title, doesn't it? Goleman and Boyatzis. Daniel Goleman? Yep. Come across Daniel Goleman? Emotional intelligence. He's one of the pioneers of EQ. Probably done more research and more writing than anybody else around this. If you want the sources, those are the ones I'm drawing on at the moment. They are in the bibliography, I think, again at the end. But you'll get the slides, so you've got them in there. Boyatzis, in particular, Goleman, sorry, in particular, in the last 7 or 8 years, has taken his writing about emotional intelligence into a deeper area. He doesn't call it SQ, but I certainly would. He's talking about that sense of giving back, that sense of being drawn. We'll come back to the difference between EQ and SQ in a moment. And then Maslow. I'm told that's how he pronounces it. I would have said Maslow. You know, Maslow's needs hierarchy, 1949. But for those who don't, basically you start at the bottom with your needs, and only when the bottom level for food, water, sex, and other basic essentials, basic survival things are there, can you move on to thinking about and needing safety and security. It kind of makes sense. So you move up the hierarchy. And the final bit was self-actualization, being the best you can. However, 1969, Maslow went further. He said there's another area. There is something above self-actualizers, and that is self-transcenders. Now, if you want a quick note to the academic bit, I would argue that self-actualization is probably EQ, and the self-transcending is probably SQ. If you want to debate that later, I'm happy to do that. For the moment, I'm just throwing that out as my opinion. That doesn't come in any of the academic literature. So let me go back to the people that you chose, that you most admire. Chances are some of them will be on that list. Would it help if I read some of the bottom ones? I'm realising I'm flat and you're finding it's a bit difficult to read some of them. We go through the religious figures, the fairly obvious ones. Political leaders like Gandhi, Mandela, Luther King, interestingly Jimmy Carter. I'm presuming that's through the building of homes and for the moment the organisation he set up, Habitat for Humanity around the world. Relatives, mother, father, grandparents, aunts, uncles, children, teachers, religious leaders, counsellors, for that, read coaches. It's an American list. Authors, TV, those sorts of things. It would be the people on TEDx, those sorts of areas. And then, I love this final category, others. Co-worker, neighbour, patient, boss, animals. Pets. Interesting. Not one I readily identify with, but I'm sure I should be corrected later. That's the easy bit. The hard bit is why. What characteristics do we see in those people that mean that almost anywhere where you go in the world, and the person who's done this list, Conscious Pursuits, is a woman called Cindy Wigglesworth, who I've trained with. Cindy Wigglesworth has done this throughout the world, and the list changes very little. So why? What are the characteristics that they're showing that make them almost universally recognised? A couple of minutes. Talk with your neighbour or the people around you. What do you think are the qualities that those people are showing? Then I'll ask you for a bit of feedback. No, that's still pretty good. That's still pretty effective. This one's actually about leaders because it relates to the people that we were just talking about, again, from Cindy Wigglesworth's research. But I'm guessing that quite a lot of those cropped up in your discussion. Would that be fair? Anything significant that's not on the list that you'd like to call out for our attention? Kindness, absolutely.
Resilience.
Yep.
For me, it's a feeling of bringing light in. It's that feeling.
Bringing life in.
Light.
Light in.
Light and warmth.
Brilliant. Like that. You know when you've been in their presence. Yeah, we'll come back to that in just a moment. Absolutely. Anything more? I mean, you get the sense. It's a little bit like that definition of the Ofsted lesson, isn't it? Wow. You can't necessarily define what it is about them, but you damn sure know when you've been in their presence, when you've heard them. I'm going to be controversial. I'm going to suggest, or ask at least, whether 5 years down the line, Obama's going to end up in that category. I might also suggest somebody else who probably won't, but I wouldn't like to be rude or political. Okay, we need to move on a little bit. So there were three names, Goleman first, Maslow, Stephen Covey, one of my own personal favourites. You know Stephen Covey, From Good to Great, Seven Habits of... Thank you. You know it when you see it, you just can't necessarily describe it. Yeah, Stephen Covey is one of the leading thinkers in this area. His latest work, I think, he churns them out fairly quickly, was about live, learn, love, and leave a legacy. That, he said, is the definition of a fulfilled life. If you can say that you've lived, learned, loved, and left a legacy. Quite interesting, because it seems to me that's around EQ, SQ, IQ, and what's sometimes called PQ, physical quotient, the awareness that we need to treat our bodies with respect in order for building health. Those four areas. That's how he drew it out. And you notice the book, it's the eighth habit. Bit cheeky, really. He writes the definitive book about seven habits, and then says, oh, by the way, actually, there's an eighth. From effectiveness to greatness, that's why I have stolen with pride for the title of this lecture, From Great to Greatest. It's two Covey terms. Live, love, learn, and leave a legacy. Now that's an interesting one, because if you ask people what they would like to be said about them at their funeral, what would they like to be remembered for, you're starting to get to this sort of area of SQ. It's what they want to have made a difference over. We need to move on. I'm very conscious of the timing. So I am arguing then that the bit that is the most significant in moving from great to greatness, from emotional intelligence, EQ, to SQ, is SQ itself. It's the awareness of that sense of the spiritual. It raises our perspective. Final quote, back to Maslow. Human history is a record of the ways in which human nature has been sold short. The highest possibilities of human nature have practically always been underrated. Now, I reckon as coaches, we need to bear some responsibility for that. But as coaches, we actually have a fabulous opportunity to do something about it. Because if we're not working to help the people that we coach be the best they possibly can be and beyond, we ain't doing our jobs properly, in my opinion. So, a bit about SQ. It's about who we're called to be rather than what we're called to do. It's about things like inspiration, connectivity, self-transcendence and legacy. It's about making a difference. In the next bit, I'm going to talk about two of the key skills for exploring the area of spiritual intelligence. We've got 15 minutes to do it. I'm very conscious that you've been sitting down here for more than 45 minutes, most of you. Can I suggest we pause for 10 seconds? If you want to get up, have a quick move around. Ideally, don't leave the room. I'm going to very briefly mention somebody called Nick at this time. No relation to the Bolton. I hadn't thought about this when I sent the slides in. And I suddenly got a very panicked email from Zoe saying, are these questions for Nick Bolton? No, Nick is a case study. We're not going to spend a lot of time on Nick because we're getting short of time. But he is somebody who we work through to show some of the questions and how Nick answers those questions. So Nick, you remember, is the CEO of OMG. And this is it's based on a real coaching situation that I had, but I remind you the names are altered to protect the innocent. Let me tell you about Nick. Nick's business is an international marketing agency. Nick isn't particularly tall. He has a massive black hair and a trendy haircut. He was wearing a white T-shirt with some hip message or other that I couldn't quite read, which is probably a good thing. And, of course, sneakers and mankles. The reception area for his office was steel minimalist, token mismatch of coffee table books on a wooden pallet fixed to one wall. It had views over most of the town and large, austere chrome wall clocks that served to remind him of the time in each of the business's five global offices. Boston, 10 o'clock. London, 3 o'clock. Dubai, 6 o'clock. Singapore, 10 o'clock. And you've got to feel sorry for the Aussies, midnight. Nick had been in post for about 6 years, he told me, and had turned the business around from an 80% churn to 94% who were excited to work there. And for the first 4 years, profits had climbed as well, so he had little direct interference from his owners, who in any case were based in Sydney. He was very amply rewarded. He did have the Aston Martin DB8, and I can vouch for it. I helped to push start it when it broke down in the car park. When I asked him what he wanted to achieve from our session, he said he called me in to talk about how to motivate his team. Okay? Are you going with me on this coaching hack coming in? Because they were no longer excited and motivated. They'd lost their vision. So, first coaching question, and before you start judging me as an awful coach, please remember, this is a resume. Tell me what's going on at the moment, Nick. Almost direct quote. Oh, God, I'm working all the hours under the sun and moon, trying to get buy-in from my team and getting absolutely nowhere. We've just lost one of our biggest clients, and I reckon a couple more will go before the end of the year. They're all taking the work in-house. It's so frustrating. We need to find a fresh approach, but we're all so ground down just trying to keep afloat, we just seem to drop back to the same old, same old. I was supposed to be taking my wife to Thailand this week, but I've had to cancel. She's not a happy bunny. And it would have been our first proper holiday in 2 years. Ooh. Coaching questions flooding in already. Second question, fairly obvious one. So why do you do it then? You might well ask. All I'm doing is 18 hours a day masterminding campaigns to persuade people to part with money they can't afford for things they don't need. To be honest, I do it because I feel I owe it to my team. Some of them have turned down really great offers to stay with us. I feel I'd be letting them down. But now, everything I want to do to turn the tide back, the owners just block. It's too expensive. It's not right for us. We tried that 5 years ago. It didn't work. And now they're telling me I need to reduce the headcount by 20% to increase profits. That's suicide. I tell you, there's got to be more to it than this. Next question. So why did you take the job in the first place? Actually, I never thought I'd get the job. There were others much better qualified and experienced, so when they offered it to me, it just felt like my destiny. I'm passionate about creating a great place for people to work and then helping them give their best. My vision is for OMG to be a platform for innovation and leave tomorrow in a better state than yesterday. Fair few bits to go on there, I think. Keep those bits in mind as we go through. First of the two skills, how do you recognise when there's something going on in the area of spiritual intelligence? I suggest there are two things under this. Language and metaphor. Listen to the images that they're using when they talk. Listen to the actual words that they're doing. I'm going to suggest that often the way in is through gateway areas. Either questions they're asking or questions that you can toss into your coachees. The why questions. Yeah, why is there suffering? Why am I suffering? Why am I doing this? That's a great invite to start exploring whether there's more to life than this. What questions? What should I be doing? What can I do? About direction and purpose. What is my purpose in life? And how? How on earth did it get to be like this? How on earth do I get out of it? Or sometimes, if there's an ethical question, how do I deal with this? My employers are expecting me to behave in a way that I do not believe is ethically right. That's an interesting one to explore, about what is right. Why do you feel that's wrong? Why is that important to you? Where are your values in this? What is it challenging in you? So gateway areas, the broader part. I haven't jumped one there. Then there is what I call core terminology to listen out for. These are the easy hooks. They're talking about the need to make a difference. They're talking about being compelled to do something. They're talking about a higher purpose. They're using the language already. All you've got to do is just help them explore it because they're already asking the questions. That's what I call the gateway, the core terminology. Sorry, the core terminology. Get this the right way around. The next one is gateway terminology. And we'll pick up some of those in a moment. This is where the coachee is not really quite conscious about the terms that they're using, but you can spot them and you can pick them up. This is the area I'm going to say is where there's the greatest traction because they're starting to walk into this area, but they don't yet realise that they are. And we're going to look at a couple of those in a moment as part of a coaching model. Again, the context from this, according to what I've read, people I've spoken to, it doesn't make any difference whether you're doing this in life coaching, business coaching, careers coaching, whether the trigger is a crisis, whether the trigger is a significant event. The birth of a child is often one. So many of the people I work with, because they're entrepreneurs in their 20s, 30s, even early 40s. They're there when a new child is born and they're suddenly saying, why am I doing this? I've got this fabulous tiny bundle at home. Why am I doing it? Why am I working these hours? Great area to explore about what is significant in their life, what really gives them meaning. Okay, passing on rather rapidly. The other one, actually, I will mention, it often comes up in what we tend to call the midlife crisis. There's a massive amount around stuff that happens midlife. Forget who it was who did the marvellous phrase, I spent all my life climbing the corporate ladder, only to find when I reached the top, it was against the wrong wall. Oh, yes. That can often come at a particular phase in life. All the things I thought I was busy doing and creating, now I've got them. Got the Aston Martin, all it ever does is bloody break down. Direct quote. Okay, we move on. Can I do a quick show of hands, please? Those of you who are familiar with the GROW model of coaching. Good. One or two hands didn't go up, so on the basis that perhaps you don't, rather than were shy to say so. Goal is a four-step process. Goals, reality, opportunities, plural, and what do I need to do? When do I need to do it? Who do I need to talk to? That's the W. What am I going to commit to? And basically, the idea is that you start with their goals for a session or for a longer period of time. Then you explore the reality, what's really going on here. And then you create as many options as you possibly can, which is where a lot of coaches fall down, by the way. I've got two hobby horses here. I've got 5 minutes. I'm going to do the two hobby horses. One is we don't spend long enough in the reality stage of this. I'll give you a very quick story about that. When I was still working in education, I ran the government fast-track scheme in London and the South East. Basically, the scheme to recruit high-flying young people and do an accelerated leadership programme into headship. I was working with a guy who had been an eminent physicist in his late 20s, who transferred into teaching in his first year. Session three. 2.5 terms in. Opening question. You happen to be called Peter. Peter, what's your goal for the coaching session today? I need you to talk me through how I come back out of teaching and into physics. It's an absolute disaster. Really, Peter? Tell me what you mean by that. Well, everybody hates my subject. Nobody pays attention in the lessons. They're not interested in it. I'm wasting my time. I might as well go and do something useful. Again, this is an abbreviated conversation. So tell me something specific. When did this last happen? Yesterday afternoon. There was a class of, it's an all-girls school, a class that I had, 14-year-olds, I think. Nobody would listen to me. It was a complete shambles. They were messing around everywhere. And I've had enough. Okay, Peter, was this the whole class? Well, no, it was just one table, really. And I suppose there are kind of two ringleaders amongst the girls. So, Peter, do other teachers have problems with these two girls? Oh, yeah, nobody in the school can handle them. Now, this is where you learn I'm a very sensitive coach. So, let me summarise, Peter, at this point. You want to leave teaching because of two girls in one class that nobody else can control. Is that right? You've got to know your coach to be that unsubtle. So, of course, it isn't. So what's the issue? I need to get some support for classroom discipline. Absolutely. Peter, what's your goal for this coaching session? Now, that's my hobby horse. It would have been too easy to go with the, what I need for this session is get me out of teaching and completely missed what the real issue was. It's too easy to do that. And we're talking about the whole issue around spiritual intelligence. This is peeling back some layers. This is sometimes peeling back some very, very uncomfortable layers. The other one is that I deliberately said that the O, the options in grow, is plural. Again, pressure of time, pressure of money, pressure of all sorts of things can mean that when we hear a solution that sounds good to us as coaches, we go with it, with the coachee. The first option is almost never the best option. Okay, thank you for bearing with me with my two hobby horses. They are relevant in this area as well, though. If you're talking to somebody about meaning, the things that they say about meaning in their life are very rarely the most important. Quick show of hands again. Do you know the five whys approach? Yep. Keep asking why at least five times when you get an answer. Then you'll start getting down to the real depth of it. So why is that? So why is that? So why is that important? So why is that important? And generally, by the time you get down to five, you're getting down some core value. So, SQ questions, when you are working with a coachee over the area, when you're working in goals. There are some examples there. Can you see how that's offering an opportunity for the sort of things that we've been talking about? Meaning, vision, purpose. What drives you? What gives you fulfillment? What takes you towards the bit that you once said about you at your funeral? If it's difficult to see at the back, the four are, how does it relate to your longer-term vision or passion? Very SQ word. What lies at the heart of this goal? SQ word, heart. What does success feel like? I don't care if it says I can retire at the age of 35. Why do you want to retire at the age of 35? What do you want to do with your life at the age of 35? That's the question. And why will you celebrate reaching it? That's a lovely hand grenade to toss in. So if you work in the goal area, and the book has got a whole lot more of those questions, which we actually haven't got time to go through. Let me move on because we're almost out of time. The reality questions, particularly from Nick. This is picking up some of the language that Nick used. Is there more to life than this? Or tell me what it might look like. How close are you to being the person you were called to be? How about that for a good SQ question? And the third one, to what extent is this moving towards or drawing you away from your most fulfilling and satisfying goals or your purpose in life? So we're deliberately using some of that gateway terminology. Now let me be very clear. Quite often they won't bite. And that's fine. After all, we are working to their agenda, not ours, even if we happen to think that it would be more useful if they did. So it's never forced. A lot of people won't pick that up. They're just not there at that point. If you coach them over a period of time, you probably will notice them moving towards it. But they won't necessarily. And I'm shunting through quickly. You've got two of Nick's answers on there. How often have you heard that? Life coaching, business coaching. Not laughing enough. My wife gets the dregs of the day, or my family get the dregs of the day. I never get to see my friends these days. They think I've died. And what inspires you? Inspiring and exciting other people. So how might you go about doing that? How might you go around making the difference? I'm absolutely shooting through here at the moment. Three key terms, and my suspicion is that they may well have cropped up when you looked at the leaders who are important to you. The ability to behave with wisdom, compassion, while maintaining inner and outer peace or equanimity, regardless of the situation. I'm going to say one more thing, but I'm shooting through, then I'm going to finish. We've talked about that We'll miss that one.
Oh, this will be in the slides that we're getting, is it?
Sorry? You'll get a copy of the slides?
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I mean, if we need to go back onto those with some questions in a minute, I can do that. But just to finish promptly, to give an opportunity for questions. I'm going to suggest that people who exhibit, horrible term, high levels of spiritual intelligence, particularly in leadership, have four key areas. And I've shunted through, so I'm just going to make sure I've got these. There is a final bit. They have an uncommon awareness of time and space. So they will typically, if they're driving into work, they will spend 5 minutes in the car, sitting in the car park, before they go into work. Because they know the importance of using their time to generate the sort of person they need to be. They don't have more time, clearly, nobody does, but they know how to use it. If they're going into an important meeting, they will have a place where they can go, sometimes only for 30 seconds, to get back into that frame of mind. Yep, it's kind of like the mindfulness stuff. The second one, tolerance of imperfection. They recognise that almost nobody goes to work intending to do a bad job. And if they do, you should have sacked them by now anyway. They are tolerant of imperfection. They will work with people through training and support and movement as far as they can, but they will euthanize if they have to. Because they also recognize that underperformance persists over a period of time affects other people as well. They have a strong sense of service to others. They're not in it for themselves, they're in it for their workforce. The person that Nick is based on told me that he sees his job as not only employing at that stage 50 people, but 50 people with significant others, family, children, people that they supported. And his job was to make that as healthy and as enriching as he could. Or the community that they work in. It's corporate responsibility, those sorts of things. And finally, they radiate peace or equanimity. I think I can say with a fair degree of confidence, if you go back to those people who you saw as being outstanding, inspiring leaders and people, they'd pick up most of those things. This bit that we said before, you might not be able to define what it is, but when you're in their presence, you know. You absolutely know. And it means that for us, as coaches, that's our privilege. I've got a final quote from Peter Senge. After research with several hundred businesses, Peter Senge wrote, "People wanted to know that they were valued and respected, that they belonged to a community and were not alone, that they could create a culture that let them bring their whole selves to work, not just their hands or their backs or their brains." Then he adds, tellingly, "To create such an organisation without spiritual intelligence would be impossible." Mr. Senge, I bow my knee to your quote. We, I would suggest, have the immense privilege and responsibility to be invited to accompany and challenge the people that we work with on that voyage into the unknown. How can we not try every tool at our disposal to help them be the best that they can and better? Thank you. You might have gathered I missed a whole chunk out there. Just as we go into the questions, the bit I didn't say, Cindy Wigglesworth has come up with what she says are the 21 skills of spiritual intelligence and how to recognise them, work and grow. If you Google the 21 skills of spiritually intelligent leaders, I think the book is called. I'll put the bibliography of spiritual intelligence. There's a lot of stuff online for that. Okay. Sorry, that was far too much talking from me, but it was billed as a lecture. Questions? Yes.
Thanks, Peter. I think it's a topic that's quite difficult to put into words often, isn't it? You know, wow kind of covers it, doesn't it?
Yep.
I wonder, when clients come to you, are they coming expecting to be developing their spiritual intelligence? Do you market yourself like that?
No, no. Although we are launching a new business next year that will be somewhat more specifically about that. I did a second book called Live the Work You Love, which is much more about how do you help people identify when they are at their best. It uses classic story writing to look at different points in your life and how you create that and use that to write the story that will be read out at your funeral. Not literally, but I suppose it could be literally. So thanks. So the short answer is no.
They're not expecting to be developing their spiritual intelligence.
No.
So you're throwing them a curveball, basically.
No, I'm listening to what they say.
Right.
A challenge for you. Over the next 4 or 5 days, when you're on the... You can't say you're on the tube. Nobody speaks on the tube. Wherever you are, the conversations are going on. Listen to what words people are using. And listen deliberately looking for some of this SQ language. And you'll be amazed how much is there. It's a little bit like planning to buy a new car. You know, you decide you're going to buy Ford Fiesta. There are no Ford Fiestas on the road until you decide to buy one. And then suddenly they're everywhere. How can Ford be selling so many Ford Fiestas in such a short period of time? I'm pretty sure you'll find the same. We talk about active listening in coaching, don't we? It's absolutely active listening.